This is KYUK, public radio for the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. I'm Anna Rose MacArthur. There is a dire situation developing on the lower Kuskokwim River. The river is approaching the Nepakiak School fuel tanks, and inside those tanks sit 34,000 gallons of fuel. Meanwhile, the season of fall storms lies ahead. Here's the latest on the lower Kuskokwim School District's plans for preventing an environmental disaster. The erosion at Nepakiak is accelerating. This month, the community gathered to discuss retreating or relocating entirely. At that meeting, a representative from the Lower Kuskokwim School District stood up and said repeatedly that LKSD would not let the school fuel tanks fall into the river.
Is that a statement that you can support?
I put the question to LKSD Superintendent Dan Walker.
Well, we will do our absolute best. We just simply can't have that level of disaster take place.
So here's the plan. LKSD is sending three fuel tanks to Nepakiak, hopefully before freeze-up. The tanks will sit in the school parking lot. When spring comes, they'll transfer the fuel from the old fuel tanks into the new tanks. The new tanks aren't large enough to hold all the fuel that's currently in the old tanks, and with less fuel, there will be less risk of spilling. That's the school district's plan. But no one knows what the river will do. And it's only a guess as to how close it'll be to the tanks by spring. LKSD has known about the problem since the mid-1990s, but it's been accelerating. In early August, a school employee measured less than 50 feet between the river and the fuel tank fence. Winter freeze-up could buy the school district time, but between now and then, fall storms are expected to hit.
Has there been a distance set between the tank farm and the river of, like, this is the limit? Like, when it reaches X amount of feet, we are going to transfer the fuel no matter what.
Not by us, but I suspect the Coast Guard is going to help us come to that decision.
The U.S. Coast Guard is also inspecting the situation. The school district has thought about putting up barriers to slow the erosion, but it can't use school money on non-school property. Also, the community has already tried this approach, using sandbags, tarps, and willows. Nothing has worked. The school district does have a backup strategy. In an emergency, they'll transfer fuel into a Nepakiak Corporation fuel tank and then put the rest in temporary containers, which have not yet arrived. There's also the question of what to do with the soil surrounding the tanks, and if that needs to be cleaned before the river reaches it. There are no records of fuel spills at the site, but the school has been there since the 1970s. Superintendent Walker uses the words urgent and emergency to describe the situation, but when action will happen remains undetermined.
I'm sorry, there's just not a real hard and fast answer to those things. And part of it is the process and the unknowns that we have. A lot of it is dependent on the pace of that erosion.
There's another thing slowing the process: government bureaucracy. Emergencies require quick, decisive action. That's the opposite of how bureaucracies function. Cleaning the soil requires help from the Department of Environmental Conservation. The Department of Education holds the money for school construction, and the legislature did not appropriate any funding for Nepakiak this year. LKSD has not applied for other sources of funding. Thankfully, LKSD does have a piggy bank. Inside is enough to get several projects started, like building a temporary fuel tank site, taking down the old tanks, and even designing a new school. The Nepakiak School sits right behind the fuel tanks. There are no regulations for a situation like this. Superintendent Walker says most likely the district will close one wing of the school if the river gets too close and bring in temporary classrooms. Turning now to Juneau, as communities across Alaska react to deep state budget cuts, some Alaska Natives are saying the state can learn from their cultures how to survive hard times. They say Alaska Natives are galvanized to try to prevent the cuts from happening or to step in to respond if they do. Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitchiman recently covered a special Native Issues Forum in Juneau that included brainstorming ideas on how to respond to the cuts.
Alexana Salmon is the president of the Igiagig Tribal Village Council. She says Alaskans can learn from Alaska Native stories, like how to survive in times of starvation. Salmon says the cultures and traditions of Alaska Natives have prepared them to respond to the cuts.
This is our home, and we're the hosts. And we need to be not only at the table, we need to be setting the table. And in this situation, we need to help this administration because they don't come from the culture that we come from that doesn't think in 10 years or 20 years. We're thinking of progress for the next 10,000 years.
The Alaska Natives participating in the forum proposed a wide range of responses. One was to create an Alaska Native education consortium that could receive Head Start funding directly from the federal government if Governor Mike Dunleavy again vetoes all state Head Start funding. Dunleavy has said the cuts are necessary to bring the amount the state spends in line with how much it raises. He also supports paying nearly $1 billion more in permanent fund dividends according to the formula in a 1982 state law. One participant says more Alaska Natives should run for elective office, including governor. Richard Peterson is the president of the Central Council of Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska. He says Dunleavy has, quote, declared war on Alaska.
How do I feel like we're not at war? I know as the president of Tlingit and Haida, these vetoes are going to happen. I have no doubt of it. All I know is what's left is our need to move on and our need to provide services for our people.
Peterson says he's finding it hard not to use what he calls his angry voice.
Tlingit and Haida operates Head Start programs here in Southeast Alaska. Our people, our parents, they're not going to care whose fault it is when I tell them we have to close down centers. All they know is their babies aren't going to get the best start they deserve.
Native Village of Afagnac Tribal Administrator Melissa Borton says the Tribal Welfare Compact the state and tribes signed 2 years ago shows the important role of tribes in providing services in the state. And she says the budget cuts are galvanizing Alaska Natives.
Our people are fired up, and I love it, because it's about time. It's about time that we get fired up and actually tell them what we want.
Genevieve Guanzan, an elder, says Tlingit ancestors can teach Alaska a lesson.
I'm going to say this and see if anybody will understand. Chakun, yeyan tokayin, hatlilkohas, wasawa hakwani. And this is saying, long ago, our grandparents were right where we are right now. And they survived. So will we, because they taught us.
Guanzan ended her comments by singing a Tlingit song, calling on Alaskans to get up and stand together.
Mushteen, mushteen, yechikachtune.
In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
In more state budget news, Governor Mike Dunleavy says his agreement with University of Alaska leaders to reduce the university budget can be a model for funding other agencies and nonprofits. Nonprofit leaders say they're open to working with the governor, but it's unclear how the approach will work in practice.
If we can work with an institution like the University of Alaska, and this is a model, I think we can work with other agencies going forward, other nonprofits. How can they contribute? How can they help us all work together as Alaskans to deal with this fiscal issue?
Dunleavy's mention of working with nonprofits is welcomed by Diane Kaplan. She's the president and CEO of the Rasmussen Foundation, the state's largest private foundation. She says the foundation had reached out to Dunleavy's office many times since he was elected, but he hasn't met with them.
We have a lot of business with the state. We really don't know what the governor's vision is going forward with a lot of the programs that we have invested in with the state. So I hope he follows through on that and is willing to meet with people who are trying to do good to make Alaska better.
While Dunleavy's agreement with the university is leading to cuts, the state tried a different approach with another publicly funded nonprofit on Wednesday. Alaska Legal Services Corporation won't face a second veto of more than $750,000 in state funding, but the agency agreed to limit the use of state money to assist victims of domestic violence and sexual assault. Nicole Nelson is the corporation's executive director. She says the state provides 15% of the corporation's funding. She says the organization is still reviewing what the impact on legal services will be from the state dedicating its funding to a specific area.
What I can say is that we as an organization continue to be committed to providing legal aid on a full range of civil legal issues.
Dunleavy is weighing what to veto in a bill that would reduce his vetoes and pay permanent fund dividends at a reduced $1,600 level this year. This is KYUK News. I'm Anna Rose MacArthur. Thanks for listening. Please send your news tips to news@kyuk.org and stay tuned for News Yuktun coming up.